Hey, ghoul friends, it's time for another episode of Horror and a Half, the podcast where every other week we get together to talk about horror and the horror inspired. I'm your host, Rose Kaz Wicked.
And I'm your other host, Kelly Goulihan.
Hi, Kelly.
Hey, Rose.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah.
Happy Daylight Savings Time.
Happy day. That and the Oscars messed me up. I'm messed up. Too tired.
Yeah, I'm a little tired.
Yeah.
I'm a little tired. I'm in, like, post-Oscars euphoria has worn off. Had to go back to real life.
Had to go back Boo. To real life. Once again, looking at movies going, this looks like it fucking sucks. It's not real.
What do I have to achieve if it's not trying to finish all the Oscar movies? Nothing.
Pre-prepping for next year, I guess.
Life is over.
Life is not over.
It's all over for me.
No, stop that.
No, it's you're not right. True. I have to live to see the 100th Animal Academy Awards.
Yeah, you got to at least live that long.
Okay, fine.
Because it's going to be something.
Yep.
Probably something bad. It's going to be great. Maybe they'll get a host that's good then.
Oh, yeah. They'll probably, like, bring back every host.
That's still alive?
Yeah.
I think they will. I think that's a genius idea, and I think you have the pre-site like your fucking Madam Web over here.
My web connects them all. All the living Oscar hosts. I mean, I'm seeking the glory of Hugh Jackman. I did not see The Reader.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
Yeah.
Every Oscar's
we've had what,
against that.
One in our lifetime? You could have more than one at this point.
Come on.
I'm serious. Let John Mulaney host.
I mean, sure.
Or let Steven Spielberg and Martin Scorsese host.
Also good ideas.
Or put all three of them together. I don't know.
Sure.
If neither of them wants to do the whole thing, they can share.
Split it up. Take an hour each, boys.
Yeah. Have fun with it. My neighbor, who I watched like the first two-thirds of the show with before she went home to go to sleep, asked me if we would talk about the Oscars on our podcast. And mm-hmm. I said, well, no, there's not really any horror films that almost ever get nominated for Oscars, really. And she's like, not at all? She's like, you're not going to talk about it even a little? I'm like, well, maybe in the opening, but it's not on the docket.
It's the only good thing that happened ever, so we're talking about it. But yeah, not as a topic.
No.
There were zero horror movies nominated.
Yeah, not one. I don't know which one I would have nominated, but I bet you could have found something.
Yeah, I'm sure. Probably.
Yeah.
But alas.
Very much alas. I did have to explain. I didn't have to, but... because I said I'm sad about the Wolfman out loud, I had to explain what I was talking about and why. When Ryan Gosling walked by and I said I'm sad about the Wolfman. Because I am. Pretty sad about it. She's like, do you want him to play the Wolfman because you think it'd be funny? I'm like, I think he'd be good at it. No, I don't know what to tell you.
Be good. Only 6 horror movies have been nominated for Best Picture in the history of the Oscars, according to Google.
Okay. Get Out was nominated.
Yes, you did it.
Jaws was nominated.
You did it.
Was The Exorcist nominated?
You did it.
I'm halfway there. I have no idea what the others might be. What are respectable ones that they would nominate?
So one of these, I don't know if you would call... I wouldn't have called it a horror movie,
okay,
just off the top of my head.
Okay.
The other one straddles the horror thriller line, mm-hmm, though it has a horror icon in it. And then the third one is definitely horror.
Okay. I mean, like, Psycho wasn't nominated.
No.
Should have been. I don't even know what came out that year. Should have been.
That's pulp to you, not for the Academy Awards.
Yeah, this is when I'm like, my respectability points have run out. Because I can name you a number of horror movies that should have been nominated for something. I don't know. I don't know. Can I have another hint?
Let's see. Maybe not. Because let's see. We saw... I think you've seen all of these.
Okay.
I think we talked about one of the directors earlier today.
Oh, is it like The Sixth Sense?
Yes, The Sixth Sense.
Classy.
They covered one of these on Blank Check.
Okay. John Carpenter's never been nominated.
No. The director is deceased.
The Shining wasn't nominated.
The beginning of a franchise.
Oh. Huh. Well, now I feel very foolish.
Maybe not the beginning. I don't know.
Could be.
Based on a book.
Based on a book? They haven't covered Rosemary's Baby, and they probably won't. Is Rosemary's Baby the other one, by the way?
No. I would call that a horror movie.
I would. So is this one the not horror
thriller? No, this is the horror thriller. One of the actors in it was nominated for an Oscar this year.
Shit. These all seem like really good clues. And I take back every mean thing I've ever said about, or even dismissive thing I've said about having to guess things on a podcast, because it's much harder when you're here.
It is hard. I'm sorry to do this to
you. No, it's fine. I'm having an okay time. Dead director. Beginning of a franchise. Blank Check covered them. What fucking dead directors have they covered?
He's like recent-ishly dead. Not like recent, but in the last decade. Like, he has had movies come out in... this century.
Huh. With someone who was nominated last night.
Yeah, he died in 2017.
Okay. I don't know. I don't want to leave too much dead air. Who is it?
It was The Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, of course. Sorry, Jonathan.
Super dead.
Super dead. Don't much like that movie, personally. We did cover it, though.
That's true.
You could have said that. I still wouldn't have remembered.
And then the other one is Black Swan.
Is that the one you wouldn't have called a horror movie?
I wouldn't have called a horror movie.
No, but we did see it together. But no, I wouldn't have... No. Like a psychological thriller, probably.
Yeah.
Good time at the movies is what I'll call it.
Fair enough.
Huh. They should nominate more horror movies.
They should.
They should.
I'm kind of surprised Rosemary's Baby wasn't.
Yeah. When I'm like, oh, wait, that one's got to be one of them.
If I had to guess six horror movies that were nominated for Best Picture, I probably would have guessed that.
Yeah.
Seems like it should be.
Yeah, that falls under the classier spectrum.
Yeah.
Alas.
But have you been up to anything horror-inspired?
Just a little bit.
Okay.
I watched My Bloody Valentine.
Okay.
The original.
Okay.
From 1981. I watched it with a podcast commentary track, the way I've watched many of these slasher films. I learned from that podcast track that Quentin Tarantino said this is the best slasher movie.
Oh. And you take Q-Tip's endorsement as the gospel truth.
Gospel. Everything he says, no.
You agree with.
I was sitting there, I'm like, he can't possibly count Halloween in this. He must have, like, a separate bucket in his brain for proto-slashers. Otherwise... Halloween and Black Christmas, what the fuck are you talking about? My Bloody Valentine's the best one. But he was not there to answer my brain questions, so I don't
know. I send him to your house to answer your brain questions?
I mean, if you send Q-Tip to my house, I will invite him in. I will offer him a Diet Dr. Pepper. It's about all I've got. Very and kind. I will ask the question out loud. And then we'll have to see what happens. I am sitting here growing tense. Adrenaline. I don't like the idea of Q-Tip coming to my house, but I wouldn't just be rude to him. This isn't his fault, or is it?
What if he just stood outside your door like Michael Myers?
Like, what if we became best fucking friends?
What if
like,
you that's became the concern. Best friends, Kelly? What if that's... Q-Tip was worth it? What that's... if he's just so fun to talk to? He loves movies.
He does. That's the concern, Rose.
What if he gets you to listen to his podcast?
Oh, God. And I'll be like, no, it's actually really good. I love it. Oh.
Yeah. Next thing you know, you're hanging out with Marc Maron.
Oh, God. What's happened to my life? I made a friend and it ruined my life? You know, sometimes you're like, I'm opposed to something, but maybe privately you worry. Maybe you wouldn't be so opposed if he came to your house and answered your brain questions.
You have to ask him what it was like to be on American Idol for me.
Okay, I can do that. One of the commercials during the Oscars was for American Idol, and it's like, it's the internet sensation. And I said, I don't think that's true.
No, it started in, like, the year 2000.
I think they're like, it's still huge on the internet. I'm like, is it? I don't know about that.
This is the first that I've heard that it's still on.
Yeah.
Commercial during the Oscars.
Again, show me a fucking trailer for a movie. How about that? My neighbor was like, it is still on, and the auditions have not been very good this year.
That's the point.
Yeah. Anyway, what the fuck was I talking about? My Bloody Valentine. Before I panicked about
before
director.
I tried to mentally ruin your life.
Before Madam Web-like, I saw a possible future. My neighbor also said she feels bad for Madam Web, and I'm like, the movie's not good, though.
No, don't feel bad for Madam Web. Madam Web is having the best possible outcome it could have.
Yeah. 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 Dude, what? It was not going to make a bunch of money. Sorry. This was the most it could hope for. So, My Bloody Valentine takes place in Valentine Bluff, which is in Canada.
Stupid. Go on.
They have a big neon heart on their town sign, little town with a big heart, it says something like that. And as the movie opens, it is a couple days before Valentine's Day. The town is done up to, not the nines, but the tens or the elevens, with hearts and bunting, and it's a pink and white and red explosion around here. But we also see, it is a mining town. Mining is very important. And we see a couple people in mining gear go down into the mine, and then it turns out they are people who are about to get it on, except one of them gets murdered by the other one, My Bloody Valentine. So most of the characters in this movie are dudes who work in this mine and their girlfriends. The sort of core cast, the three main people, are a love triangle that is made up of TJ, Sarah, and Axel. TJ and Axel work in the mine. Sarah
Axel
is
F.
Dun, dun, dun. No, no. Axel F would never do these things because spoilers. Axel is the murderer.
Oh no! That is not very crazy frog of him.
It is not at all. So TJ and Axel work in the mine. Sarah is currently dating Axel. She used to date TJ, and then he went out west where he couldn't hack it, and he had to come back to his small hometown.
All right.
We never find out what TJ did or did not do, or even where he went specifically, other than west. But who cares? I mean, they're having a bit of a problem, but the town's mostly in a good mood, because like I said, it's almost Valentine's Day, and they have a big Valentine's Day dance. That's why all the decorations are up. They haven't had one in 20 years.
This is a town dance.
It's a town dance, okay. Yes. Because these are not, these are like, you know, people in their mid to late 20s. They're
minors.
Yeah, they're that kind. Not the other kind. They have pickaxes and gas masks. They have jobs and paychecks. They haven't had a Valentine's Day dance in Valentine's Bluff in 20 years. And they don't like, the mayor's like, maybe don't mention the 20-year thing. Because 20 years ago, there was a horrible accident and 7 people got trapped, got buried alive in the mine. Like, their supervisors left early to go to the dance and didn't, like, check for methane, and there was an explosion and there was a cave-in and 7 dudes were down there and only one of them survived. His name was Harry Warden. And okay. We have, like, a flashback of them finding him and he's insane. In the cave and chewing on like an arm, and it doesn't seem like he was one of the other guy's arms. I don't think he was there for days. I think they figured it out before the night was over that a cave-in had happened, but
he just was hungry for arm.
He was so fucking hungry, and so he got taken away to a mental institution somewhat nearby. After he killed the 2 dudes who left early to go to the dance. He killed them in retaliation and, like, cut their hearts out and put them in little, like, candy boxes. So that's why they haven't had the dance for 20 years, because Harry Warden and a tragedy. But they've decided 20 years is enough. It's a small town. I bet people still know about it. It's people who might be connected are still here, probably, as we'll find out. Yeah, so but they're going to do it anyway, and there's the tensions with TJ and Sarah and Axel. And then the mayor gets a candy box, and it has the heart of the woman who died in the cold open. And this dude does not panic because a human heart is in a box. He goes, oh no, Harry Warden doesn't want us to do the dance. But he's pretty casual about a human organ in his lap in a car.
Well, could be worse.
Could be worse. I guess.
Could be.
I'd probably vomit. Probably if I opened a box that I thought was chocolate from, like, my wife or something, and it was a heart.
It could be your own heart in a box.
It could be, but then I don't have to deal with that. I'm dead.
Well, true.
But I'd have to think about the trauma that'll be inflicted upon my nearest and dearest when one of them gets the dumb box. So he's like, we gotta shut down the dance. And I feel like they hesitate a little bit, and then a woman is killed and shoved in a dryer. More hearts are cut out. And so the mayor's like, that's it. The beach is closed. Tear down all the decorations. Harry Warden is writing me notes. He says no. And, like, he calls the institute that Harry Warden is supposed to be at, and they're like, we don't got any record of that guy. Like, ever. It's like, fuck. Shit. So he's not there, huh? And they're like, we don't know who you're talking about. And he's like, it really wasn't that long ago. What's wrong with your records? But we never call this hospital again. Meanwhile, the young people of town, who, again, are in their mid to late 20s, so they were alive when all this happened, go, fuck that, fuck this noise, we're gonna have the dance anyway. And then it's not really a dance, it's just a party at that point. But we're gonna have the party. And, because they don't know that, like, notes have been left. Like, the mayor is keeping that quiet. It's just like, we can't, the lady who was putting it together got shoved in a dryer and died. We can't do the party. But they're like, fuck it, we'll do the party out at, like, the office by the mine?
Mm-hmm.
So they go there, and, like, a bunch more people get killed, like, at this party. Like, someone gets his face shoved in a pot of boiling hot dogs.
Oh. The hot dog water.
No, and then his dead body gets put in the fridge, but his heart gets put in the hot dog water. And then some people are like, I'm gonna get some hot dogs as a snack. And they're like, ew, what the fuck is this? And it's a boiled human heart. And then they're like, ah, just put it on the side. We don't know what that is. It's probably a prank.
They don't make a bun this shape.
Not only do they not make enough buns for my heart sandwiches, the hearts and the buns don't match. They're not the right shape.
Yeah, you want your thing folded hot dog, hamburger, or heart?
Heart style. Some people sneak off to have sex, and when the dude goes to, like, get a beer or something, the woman gets menaced and then gets her head shoved onto a shower faucet in a way that when he turns on the shower, when he finds her, or the shower is on, the water is coming out of her mouth.
Fuck yeah, I hope that you were gonna say that.
Yeah, you don't see that much of it. Like, this is not as gory. Based off what I'm saying, you might think this is, like, a really gory movie. It kind of isn't. But, like, the way they shoot this reveal, like, her face is sort of out of focus, like, the side of her face and, like, near the camera. But you can tell 100% that, like, she's a shower now. It's like, well, that's fucked up. Then, for fun, some people and their girlfriends decide they're going to ride the mine cart down into the mine because they heard it was like a roller coaster. It's just a very slow mine cart. And at this point, enough of the bodies not in the mine are found that everyone panics. And TJ and Axel are like, we gotta go get Sarah and our friends who are down in the mine. Because Harry Warden is back and he's killing people. So everyone leaves. They all rush out in a panic. And TJ and Axel go down in the mine. And there's some mine shenanigans down there. There's been a jokester this whole movie who fucking sucks and takes a really long time to get killed, which is unfortunate because he just keeps faking like he's dead and popping out of holes and yelling, and he's not funny. And it's just like, get Craig or whatever the fuck his name is out of here. He gets his neck super broken down in the mine. So it's like, you know, we'll split up. You go this way, you go that way. One guy who's like the third most important dude, whose name is Hollis, who's pretty cool, gets like multiple nails in his head from a nail gun. Takes a long time to die. Sorry, Hollis. And eventually it comes down to just TJ and Axel and Sarah. And at one point they think Axel has like, well, they think Harry Warden has fallen in a deep pit of water that's in this mine. And then they get attacked again, and it turns out it's Axel. And they're like, Axel, what the fuck, man? We thought it was Harry Warden. And, like, right before this reveal, the mayor gets a phone call from the hospital that's like, oh, we found the records. Harry Warden died 5 years ago.
Oh.
They're like, well, who the fuck's killing people now? It's Axel. And they're like, Axel, why'd you do it?
And then, cool, dude.
Yeah, it is very not cool. You've killed so many of our friends. The movie then flashes back to, in the Harry Warden flashback, it showed him killing one of the two dudes who was responsible for the cave-in, or was, like, negligent. Was just hitting him in the chest with a pickaxe. And it, like, silently cuts back to that, and we see this happen, and then we see, hiding under the bed in the room, the blood-spattered son of the guy Harry Warden killed, who it turns out is Axel. Which, everyone would know, because it is not a big town. It's a small town. And it's not like Axel left and came back. He's lived here this whole time.
Yeah, everybody knows.
Yeah, so it should be like, we probably shouldn't talk so much about Harry Warden. What with Axel's dad getting fucking murdered by Harry Warden? But it is a surprise to everybody. Like, oh, fuck. Obviously, he doesn't say this out loud. He just, like, makes a face. He tries real hard to kill them, but he gets caught in a rock slide. And TJ and Sarah are leaving, and a bunch of cops and, like, paramedics come in. And they're like, bad news. Everyone who came down here is dead except us. And then the paramedics are like, hey, he's still alive. And Sarah, who this whole movie, like, TJ and Axel fucking fighting over Sarah. And Sarah's been like, TJ, you didn't even tell me where you went. You didn't even call me. And TJ's like, come on, you like me better than him. And she's like, kind of. So they're like leaving. And Axel is a many person murderer. And she hears that he's alive. And she goes running back like, I've got to see him. It's like, he just tried to kill both of us not 2 minutes ago. But okay. Axel's not really seeable because in the rock slide, he lost an arm and he's on the other side of this pile of rocks and he's still alive. And he's just like laughing and being like, I'll tell Harry Warden you said hi. And he like goes off singing into the depths of the mine that they can't reach, missing an arm. And that's the end of My Bloody Valentine.
All right.
And
that's fun.
Yeah, here's the thing. Sitting here describing it, I'm like, that was pretty fun. Sitting there watching it, I'm like, I don't think I like slasher movies. Like, I think these might be the most boring movies anyone's ever made. So I might not be watching them right. I don't know. But it does have a lot of incident in it, I guess. But watching it, I'm just like, damn. I liked the ending. I liked, like, the creepiness of the ending. But it just, and it's like 90 minutes. It's not a long movie. I'm just like, we're taking forever. But yeah, maybe someday they'll do the remake that came out in like 2000, whatever, which I thought they were doing in the first place. And I can confirm that if anyone ever has me watch that movie, my library has the 3D copy with the 3D glasses in it. Ooh. So I can once again watch a 3D movie in my home, which is very exciting and fun. but that is all I have gotten up to. What about yourself?
I watched a movie.
Yeah? You sound excited about it.
I watched The Exorcist: Believer.
Oh, I fucking forgot about this. Yes. And you haven't seen the original Exorcist,
no,
right?
I have never seen
We gotta do that sometime.
The Exorcist. So this is a great introduction to the franchise.
I'm sure that's what David Gordon Green wanted. He's like, I'm gonna make a trilogy, and what an intro to the franchise it'll be.
What a fucker.
I believe they have canceled. They are not making two more Exorcist movies, I don't think.
Why the fuck would they? So, The Exorcist Believer starts with Leslie Odom Jr. Mm-hmm. and his pregnant wife on their honeymoon in Haiti. Mm-hmm. He's a photographer. She is a person. A pregnant one.
That's a job.
Yeah. She receives a blessing for the baby from a voodoo practitioner. And then there is a big fuck off earthquake. And she is horribly wounded, and we cut to the doctor telling Leslie Odom Jr., I'm sorry, we can't save them both, so you have to make a choice. Ugh. Cut to 13 years later, Leslie Odom Jr. is a overprotective father to a 13-year-old named Angela and living in Georgia. He's, like I said, he's overprotective. The daughter, we see her, like, begging to spend the afternoon, like, over to a friend's house after school. And he's like, no, how about you come to work with me like you always do instead? And she's like, please, please, we just want to do homework, please.
I mean, dude, I kind of get it, but you can't keep an earthquake from happening. Let her go to her friend's house.
And, like, she tries to take her mom's scarf, like, wear her mom's scarf to school. And he's like, where'd you get that? And she's like, oh, I found a back closet. He's like, I know that was with your mom's things, my wife's things. You have to be careful with that. You can't have that. But he does relent and let her go to her friend Catherine's house after school. And she's supposed to be home for dinner, but she is not home for dinner. And he starts freaking out. Where is she? Where is she? And we saw where the girls went. They went into the woods, into like a shack in the woods, to do a seance so that Angela can try and speak to her dead mother.
I'm doing homework for my ghost class, Dad.
Because, like, Catherine is religious, and Angela was not raised religious because Leslie Odom Jr. lost his faith after his wife was killed in a horrifying manner right before they were about to start their lives together.
Fair enough.
But Catherine is religious, so she can lead a seance. It's like, you need, you know, to have your something of your mother's. So I guess she stole that scarf back and, like, say these words and do these things. And then, okay, she's not home. And so Leslie Odom Jr. gets out, like, the school directory and calls over to Catherine's house because he doesn't actually know any of Angela's friends or their parents because they are loners, overprotective, don't hang out with anybody. And it turns out that the girls have done a, like, I'll go to your house, you'll go to my house. Actually, I think there was a third person involved. Like, Angela said she was going to Catherine's house, and Catherine said she was going to somebody else's house. Because Catherine's mom was like, we don't even know you. We would not let her go over to your house.
Call that trick the wheel.
They're missing, and they stay missing for 3 days.
Oh.
When they walk back out of the woods, like, all covered in twigs and stuff, and their feet, the bottoms of their feet are burnt, they don't have shoes, neither one of them really can tell what happened. They seem to have both, like, lost that time. They're like, how long were you gone? A couple of hours. No, no, baby, you were gone for 3 days.
Aren't you hungry? Thirsty? It's been days.
They don't know that. But yeah, they both seem fine-ish. Like, they get full, you know, physical exams by the police and by doctors, because they don't know what happened to them and nobody knows what happened to them. But they're physically, like, fine except for their burnt feet. So they get to go home. When Angela goes home, she's still being, like, nonverbal and, like, spooky, haunted kid, and, like, staring at things, and it's freaking Leslie Odom Jr. out, but, he, like, puts her to bed. We could talk about anything, like, anytime, whenever you're ready. She, like, wets herself that night, and he's drawing her a bath, and the bath all turns to blood.
This is no longer a personal problem.
Yeah, and so he's like, he like takes her back in to get checked out because she's acting, you know, not fully like the Exorcist Reagan possessed, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. like more and more possessed.
Yeah,
as time goes on.
Doc, can you look at my kid again? The bathtub filled with blood. So just can you check her out?
She's like being weird and losing time and jump scaring me for no reason.
Prescribe something so my kid stops jump scaring me. I realize that probably sounds bad, but I hate it so much.
And stuff's also not going great with Catherine. Her family is Baptist, and they're so thankful to have her home. They take her to church that Sunday, and, like, the pastor is up there being like, we are so happy to have our lost child, Catherine, home with us. And then, meanwhile, they look around, and Catherine is not in the pew. Catherine has wandered away. Catherine has gone and, like, fucked up the storeroom where you keep the communion, like, wafers and wine and stuff, and comes bursting in saying weird satanic shit. And they're like, oh, well, we don't like that. Let's also take this one back to the hospital. And so they, like, they both get taken to a mental institution. Meanwhile, the parents are, like, comparing notes. Like, is your daughter acting super possessed? Yeah. Is your daughter acting super possessed? Yeah. What should we do about it? And, of course, Victor has lost his faith. He's a skeptic. But Catherine's family is religious. Catherine's mom is like, you know what? You know what? When Jesus died and he was gone for 3 days, While 3 days that he was gone, he was down in hell telling the devil he sucks. And I think that's what our daughters did. I think they went to hell for 3 days.
To fight the devil?
That's why their feet are burned, because they are burned in hell. And now they're back. And Victor's like, that's Leslie Odom Jr.'s character's name, Victor. He's like, that's mm-hmm. crazy.
That's a hell of a leap.
He also has a neighbor or somebody in his neighborhood who is a Pentecostal preacher who, like, tries to come in and bless his house. And he's like, no, you guys have to leave. How did you get in here? Please stop trying to spiritually cleanse my house. His other neighbor, Anne, is a nurse who took care of Angela and Catherine at the hospital, and she was going to be a nun, when she was younger and, like, in her possessed state, Angela tells this nun about herself. She's like, lost a baby that never lived, blah, blah, and uses her nun name. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, that was all true. Like, I was going to take my vows as a nun, but I broke my vow and I got pregnant and I had an abortion and I never told anyone. And I never told anyone what my novitiate name was gonna be, and your daughter's definitely possessed because she knew those things. And Leslie Odom Jr.'s like, I don't believe in God, stop trying to trick me. I went down this road after Angela's mom died, and nothing from religion could help me, so nothing from religion ever will be able to help me. And then Anne's like, well, fine, you don't have to believe in what I'm telling you, but take this book,
read it. The Exorcist.
I think it'll help you. It's a book written by Regan's mom, who has dedicated her life to the exorcism arts and, like, written a nonfiction book about what happened with her family and all of the ways that you can do an exorcism in this life. And so he reads that and he goes to visit her. And she's like, yeah, no, it's all true. Like, I didn't want to believe it either, but here's what happened to me. My daughter is super mad that I wrote this book, by the way. She hasn't talked to me in years and years and years. But that's my cross to bear, because I felt like people needed to know. So anyway, here's my exorcism advice as someone who has been there. You gotta have a team up. You gotta get one of every kind of religious person. You gotta get a Catholic priest, and you gotta get the Baptist pastor, like you can get Catherine's pastor, and you can get your Pentecostal preacher friend, and you can also go talk to like a native root healer, and you get them all there and they can all do the exorcism together.
But that's not what helped Regan.
try everything, get all of them, because you know what, actually the Catholic Church are all punks and pussies.
Hey, Father Karras died to help your kid.
Well, they're not all, but the Catholic Church as an institution,
okay,
is, because they recruit a local priest, Father Maddox, I think his name was.
Sure.
And he was like, yeah, I believe, like, I see them. They are definitely possessed. I believe you. Exorcisms are so important. But the Catholic Church is, like, really sketch about doing them these days because of the bad press. So they go to the diocese and they ask for permission, and the diocese denies permission. So, and, like, Father Maddox finds this out. Like, they all go and make their case, but he finds out that he's not allowed alone. Like, they call him back and be like, we changed our mind. No. So he shows up at the exorcism to be like, sorry, they actually said no.
Do it anyway, Father Maddox.
I have to go. It's not sanctioned. I have to go.
Someone in charge has to tell you to do the right thing?
I have to go. They won't allow it. My God boss said no.
Oh, that'll be the book I write about this situation.
He's not writing any books.
Oh.
Also, before this, I forgot, they take Regan's mom to see the girl, specifically to see Catherine, to be like, is this one also possessed?
Is that what yours look like?
And Catherine stabs her in the eyes with a cross, and so she's blind now.
Why did we keep anything within stabbing range of this possessed kid?
It was a bad choice.
They did,
but
that's a woman who doesn't have to be blind.
No. So somehow, not clear on how this happened, they get the girls out of the mental institution. They're like, we're just going to check our daughters back out now. they're coming home with us. So they take them home. They draw the sigils on the floor. They nail some chairs to the floor. They tie the girls up on back-to-back chairs in the middle of these sigils. And they've got all the practitioners there to do it. Father Maddox goes to wait in the car because he's not allowed. His goddaddy said no.
He's got the ACs on. He's listening to his favorite music. Don't worry about him.
And like they're doing it. The nurse Anne steps in and she's like, you know, I know it's never a real nun, and I obviously haven't ever done this, but I think I could do it. I could do the Catholic part. Let me read the rites. Let me do the thing. And so they're all trying so hard, and it's going not great. And you know, they're saying all kinds of fucked up possessed girl stuff.
Mm-hmm. Demons aren't very nice.
And Father Maddox must have a change of heart, because he comes back in. He's like, no, I don't care what God Daddy says. I need to help these girls. And so he comes in and he starts doing it. But then he gets his neck snapped as part of the, I don't know. Anyway, RIP that guy.
He will not be writing that book. You are correct.
He will not be writing that book.
Not as moving a death as Father Karras. Great. Get out of here.
No. They keep struggling through, trying. And then Angela, as the possessed thing, is like, Hey, Dad. I know that you were given a choice and you didn't choose me. You chose your wife. And I'm here by accident, and you've always resented me, and you never chose me, and you won't choose me. And then the demon is like, you guys have to make a choice. You have to choose one of them, and I'm taking one of them. And so the parents are all like looking at each other like, no, we can't choose. I can't choose. It's so horrible. We can't choose. This is awful. You're bad demon. You can't make us choose. But it's getting like worse and worse and worse and scarier and scarier and scarier until Catherine's dad is finally like, I choose Catherine. And then it's all over. And it looks like Angela died and Catherine was saved. But psych! Catherine got sucked down to hell, and Angela comes back to life because the one that you chose is the one that you chose for me, the devil. Tee hee, tee hee.
Yeah, demons aren't very nice.
Yeah. And that's, like, the end. Oh,
wait, Regan, that's the end?
Regan comes back and says, I love you, Mom. And that's the end.
So there's no exorcism in this Exorcist movie?
Well,
they tried, but it doesn't work.
There's no devil in Angela anymore.
Yeah, it left, but it won the game it played and then it left.
Yeah, it won. It could have gotten them both.
I guess that's true. It still could.
Yeah. Bye.
Wow. That sounds really not good.
It was not great. It wasn't terrible, but it was like nothing special. Like, at having it be a religious team up is pretty goofy. There's a long time of just two girls tied to a chair.
Mm-hmm.
No shade to these parents, right? But how do you not choose your own kid like instantly when they're like, make a choice. Like, devil tricks aside, because they're not thinking about devil tricks. When they're going like, no, we can't. Oh my God, that's so horrible. I can't. They're not saying, he's trying to trick us. We can't choose. We have to stand strong.
See if that guy does it first.
They're just being like, no, it's so horrible. We can't.
I mean, it'd be one thing if they were like, you know, they'd been good friends their whole lives and they knew each other. Yeah, but from what you said, it's like, I don't fucking know you and I wouldn't let my kid go to your house.
Yeah, they don't know each other. And Leslie Odom Jr. is already established as overprotective. He'd be like, sorry to your daughter, but mine's going to live. Like, that's what would have happened.
What if in his brain he's like, She's right. I never did choose her. And now here's a chance to not do it again.
I got my fucking out, bro. No more kids. No more responsibilities.
Oh, I was standing strong against the devil. And what happened, happened. And that's the price you pay from standing. Ah, shit. She's alive. Well, fine.
I knew that would happen. Yeah. I knew the devil was trying to trick us.
Yeah. I'm very smart and a good dad. And I will not be writing a book about it.
Yeah. So I do like that, you know, it's the, well, I don't believe in God, but my daughter is clearly very extremely possessed.
Yeah.
So he doesn't spend a lot of time trying to fight it. He's just like, I don't think so. Like, I really don't want that to be true. Oh, here's a book. Oh, here's a lady. Oh, here's another lady. Okay, let's do an exorcism. It's like six against one. Okay, she's possessed. You got me.
Once you're like, I guess she's possessed, he's just like, well, there's no point in dicking around. Get in here.
Yeah. Get the fucking Noah's Ark of preachers in here. Let's do an exorcism.
Just keep throwing holy water at my kid or whatever.
Yeah, and at the end, like, when they're fighting the devil, the exorcism's coming to a close, they're being given a choice, they can't make a choice, he does start like reciting the Lord's Prayer, and that rallies everybody for a minute until Catherine's dad is like, nah. I choose.
Which did you prefer, watching the film Exorcist Believer or going through the Exorcist Believer house at Halloween Horror Nights?
I prefer going through the Exorcist Believer house in Halloween Horror Nights, not really knowing any goddamn thing about this movie because I hadn't seen it yet.
Correct.
And hadn't seen The Exorcist either. Mm-hmm. And like every room was the same room, just at different levels of possession. Like, oh, the chairs in the middle of the room again, huh? I think that Halloween Horror Nights should do more with smells.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they do a little, but mm-hmm. they could do more. They could make the Exorcist Believer house, like, really stink.
They could. And maybe even they should.
Like, I feel like they talked about that in the movie of, like, when the devil is there, it smells really bad.
Devil stinky.
Yeah. Like, make it just real fetid and gross in here. Sulfur. I don't care.
Yeah, I was going to say sulfury, maybe. Yeah. Why not? Make the places smell.
Yeah, mostly they all just smell like that fake fog smell.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they've thought about trying to make it smell, but it's like, well, we're not cutting out the fog, so at some point it's just fake fog smell on top of whatever.
Yeah,
can't fight the fake fog. We need the fog.
I mean, I guess they did the candles. They did candles that smelled like it. That's maybe what I'm thinking of, because the Exorcist Believer house candle did smell bad.
Great. I thought I read that the house smelled bad, but
it does. Like, it did. Like, they did do a little bit, but mm-hmm. they could have done more.
Yeah. Really gross people out.
Yeah. You know what, like, decay smells like?
Yes, I do.
It's great.
Oh, I love it. It doesn't like, make me unhappy at all.
It's like sweet, but also stinky. Yum.
Great. Great, great. Well,
I want this house to smell like your dog rolled in it.
Oh no,
stinky. But that's all that I did.
Okay.
No more trilogies for David Gordon Green.
No.
No more horror trilogies for David Gordon Green.
Yeah, I guess he can try to make a different one, but yeah, the 1-2 punch of Halloween Kills and this. Has Halloween killed his trilogy plans? Yeah. Thank you.
What if they wood-chipped the devil?
That'd be great. What if the kid who got chosen got wood-chipped? Be funny. But probably less good for the people involved.
No. Yeah. Yeah, nothing comedy happens.
Not one funny thing. I mean, I believe it.
You know, I guess some of the stuff that the girls say is, like, shock value funny, but nothing memorable.
Okay.
Nah. So do you wanna talk about Ghost Watch?
Yeah, I would like to. Okay. 1992's Ghost Watch?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
The one and only.
It's the only one. Ghost Watch, all one word, which sort of surprised me.
It's Ghost Watch.
Ghost Watch. We gotta talk about the logo.
Oh, yeah, we do. This Ghost logo was Watch. Sick as shit.
Like a rock launches out of a TV?
Yeah, like a claymation rock launches out of a TV, unwraps itself?
Yeah, breaks open.
Rolls some more, breaks open, and has, like, One Presents chiseled like inside of it.
BBC One etched in gold. It was really an impressive logo. Yeah. And then we get the opening credits, which are maybe a third of the length of that logo. So I can see why people didn't realize this was fiction, because there is a written by credit, but it's gone as fast as you can blink.
It's real fast.
Yeah, they don't want you to know that this is not real.
Because, yeah, it's presented like a sort of Dateline-esque live TV presentation. We're in a studio with a presenter, Michael Parkinson, a real BBC presenter, talking about how we're gonna explore some ghost stories tonight, Halloween night.
Happy Stick Halloween. Around. Welcome to Ghost Watch. We have so many elements going on in our live show.
So let me introduce you to the concept of the Paranormal Activity universe with some footage. Let's give you a little tease of what this whole thing is about. Some university researchers have been trying to document paranormal activity. So here's a surveillance video of some little girls in their bedroom. It's fine. They like go to bed, turn out the lights, and immediately there's a lot of banging noises and things flying around the air and them screaming and calling for their mom.
Like a light bulb explodes.
Yeah.
It's bad in here.
And yeah, it is. So get ready for that.
Right. And he's like, this house, they've been investigating it. It's on Fox Hill Drive, and they've been investigating it for like 6+ months. This is the Early house. That's the name of the family. And yeah, they've done so much investigating, and the person who's the lead of that, Dr. Lynn Pasco, is here to hang out with me, Michael.
Yeah, so now we get introduced to, like, 7,000 people, only, like, two of which actually matter. Like, the family and Dr. Lynn Pasco. Yeah, she is the paranormal researcher. She is there in studio. She will be essentially the co-host for the night. And then we've got a whole bunch of people that are on location, including the, I guess, on location presenter Craig Charles.
Yeah, he's like, he might have his own ghost hunting show, I don't know, but he's not taking any of this seriously. Get out of here, Craig.
No. We meet the woman of the house, Pam Early, and ask her to describe what's been going on, and she's like, yeah, like a lot of stuff like you just saw, like stuff breaking, stuff getting thrown. The plumbing not working, the plumbing working too good, the plumbing working but smelling. Nobody able to give us any explanations. My daughter's unhappy. That's it.
It's been like, yeah, for a long time. It just keeps happening.
We're also going to be taking calls in the studio. We also have Mike Smith, another presenter, who's going to be the one talking to the people taking calls. Back on location, we have Sarah Green, who is the other on location presenter, who's going to be staying the night in the house and is also Mike Smith's wife for some reason.
Yep.
And she had a prior incident. You'll hear about it later. Mm-hmm. Back on Fox Hill Drive, we have Alan Demescu, a psychic researcher and, like, in charge of all of the ghost tech, the infrared and the sensors and the whatnot. You'll not see this. Well, you'll see him again one more time, but it's not important. Forget this man and this van exist.
Truly, like, they go in there and they look at all the bits and bobs, and we don't hear or think about Alan for the next hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah, and, like, they then show us a different guy who has the, like, a thermal camera, and we don't see that again.
No. I forgot that was real. I forgot about that.
I'm like, are we ever gonna see any of the ghost technology? No. But yeah, like, also, so many people.
Isn't the cameraman also named Mike? Like, aren't there three Mikes?
Yes, this is another thing? Mike. I'm
pretty sure. Mike doesn't have the boom mic. Someone else has the boom mic.
Yeah, that's a different mic. But yeah, they've got, you know, cameras rigged all throughout the house, plus the cameraman, plus the thermal camera. But again, don't worry about him. You're never going to see it. And yeah. They're gonna stay there all night. This is gonna be on all night.
It doesn't seem, because they preempt a show later.
Yeah, like, later they do. They say, if you're just tuning in now, sorry about your show, but this got too exciting.
I guess it's like, well, you'll just stay all night, and if it's interesting, we'll throw together a special later. I don't know.
You'll hear about it in the morning.
There's also a bunch of looky-loos.
Yeah.
Who are just like, woo, yay. And it's like, this it's family.
The Today Show out here.
Yeah. This family is in distress. A woo. Lot of you fuckers, people making the show also, way too cavalier when it's just like, eh, pretty funny. Anyway, scratches keep appearing on this child.
Wave inexplicably. To the thermal camera. Woo. Yep.
Woo. Do the wave.
Woo.
Yeah.
So
we hear how they picked the house. Did you get this line where Dr. Pascoe's like, we ran a computer program of all the haunted locations in the UK and we picked this one.
The most haunted.
And I'm like, you did a what now? And it's like, anyway.
I mean, that we picked it. Not true also. But maybe it is. Who the fuck knows? But yeah, so they're like, all right, that's everybody. It's not even quite everybody, but that's mostly everybody. Let's take a call. I don't know.
Also, as a warning, just real fast, everyone watching at home, we might see nothing. You might be here for the next hour and see jack shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, call us with your ghost stories.
Yeah, so a lady named Emma calls in. And she's like, hey, I don't have a ghost story, but I did when you showed that clip from the room earlier. I saw a figure.
And there's a guy in it.
Yeah. Like, by the curtains. And they're like, cool. Great. We're in for a good night with calls like this. Thank you, Emma.
They're like, can we rewind the tape? And it's like, yeah, it'll take like 10 minutes. So let's go back to the house while we figure out how to rewind the tape here in the studio on our big. They've got like a big square of like 12 TVs or whatever, you know.
Yeah, we didn't know how to make a big TV back then. So we just stack TVs.
It's beautiful in its way.
3x3 grid of TVs.
It's fun. It's very, like, this all, the verisimilitude of all this nonsense that we get at the beginning, it's like, this does feel like a 90s TV special. Perfect.
It was a 90s TV
special. It was. They did great, is what I'm saying.
But yeah, back at the house, Sarah gets jump scared by Craig, who's, like, hiding in a closet.
Fuck off, Craig.
With a mask. And yeah, she's basically like, fuck off, Craig, without swearing on a live TV.
You know, it turns out Craig and her husband had a bet on whether she would swear on TV.
And she doesn't. They try and claim that beast is a swear word. But
well, he's like, I thought you were going to say a four-letter word, and beast has five. And it's like, fuck off, Craig. I could have said anything. And I'm not swearing. I'm a professional.
I'm a professional. Yeah. But they talk about what the very first encounter that they had was they yes. have Suzanne talk about how they were her and her sister. It's Suzanne and Kim.
Yes.
Susie and Kimmy are the daughters. Suzanne is the older one. Kim is the younger one. They share a room. They were upstairs in their room. And this story doesn't really hold together. But anyway, the mom was supposed to tuck them in, and they thought the mom had tucked them in, but the mom hadn't tucked them in because she had fallen asleep on the couch. And that right. was the first sighting of anybody, a woman right. who came and tucked them in silently. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, well, what happened then? It's like, well, then the thing came to my room and made a hell of a ruckus, banged on the walls. Started banging around. And the girls could hear it through the wall from their room. And I didn't know what to tell them, so I told them it was just the pipes banging. And now they call the ghost pipes.
Yep. Because it does still love banging around.
He mostly bang.
Yeah.
Also, he lives in the hatch under the stairs, like the closet, the cupboard under the stairs.
Yeah.
Which we call the glory hole.
They keep calling it the glory hole.
Did you know that Harry Potter grew up in a glory
in a glory hole? incredible. They just yeah. keep saying it.
And they show the door to the glory hole, except they don't, because it's been completely boarded up. Like,
yes.
Board completely covering the door, bits of trim, like, nailed across, holding it together.
Yeah, I thought this was, like, an old-timey basement door. And then it's like, no, that's just the big plank over a normal door.
Yeah. And then she's like, yeah, my ex-husband, who's not around and not involved, forget that detail, he's not important, mm-hmm. used to have a dark room where he developed pictures in the glory hole.
He'd go in the glory hole and he'd fucking bend 180 degrees and he would develop photos while standing on his hands.
And so once it wasn't his dark room anymore, I stored stuff in there, and one day I decided to go in and get some divorce paperwork out of the glory hole, and in so doing I went all the way inside of the glory hole, and then the door closed.
Yeah. And I couldn't get it open. And I felt like someone else was in there with me.
And I was like screaming and banging. And the girls couldn't get it open until they eventually did.
And she says, like, I nearly died.
You were stuck in a closet.
She was so scared. I love this story. This whole thing. The divorce papers.
It's so weird. Why are we hearing any of this? Why do I care if your ex-husband used to live in the glory hole? He's not here anymore. It's storage. What is it storage for? Divorce papers. I put the divorce papers in his favorite room, the glory hole, to spite him.
Everything about this story is perfect. I don't know. I love it. It's just like, I don't know. Fill the hour. Tell us what's going on.
Tell us.
It's live TV. What are you going to say? It's like my ex-husband's glory hole. It's like, perfect. Keep going.
Keep going. So they ask the girls if they've ever seen pipes. Mm-hmm. And Kimmy says she has, and that she drew a picture of it. And can we see the picture of it? Yes. And it's a weird little, like, clown sack.
Yeah, he looks like a little sci-fi dude. Like, pipes are coming out of him, but yeah, he looks like a sack. He's also so small on this page of lined paper.
And they're like, great, let's put this on the fridge. And so they do.
Sarah, you can keep it. Gee, thanks.
Yeah, I don't want your fucking ghost picture. I'm going to put it on your fridge.
Yeah, here you go. Great. At this point, Pam is made to, and I mean, she volunteered for this, go outside to sit in a phone box and take calls from people. Her children are staying in the haunted house, though, with some reporters.
Well, do you want your children talking to strangers on live TV, or do you want them talking to strangers on live TV in the haunted house?
I feel like maybe my fucking ex-husband should step up and watch my kids for the night.
No, he peaced the fuck out. Yeah, we don't know at what point the husband exited the picture. Was it pre or post beginning of the haunting?
Yeah. Fuck them ghosts, he said.
Yeah, so mom has gone out to, yeah, go to the mini studio, put an earpiece in. And inside, we're still looking at, well, we look at Susie's workbook, where she's got some, like, automatic writing in it that she claims is from Pipes. Also, they were, like, bobbing for apples and shit earlier.
Like, in a very small bowl that can't hold two of their faces. Yeah, Sarah keeps going to
put her face in there, and I'm like, there are two children's faces in there. You can't, Sarah. You can't.
You can't. In the studio, they are getting more calls that are like, we see that figure, though. And they're like, we're still trying to pull the tape up.
Yeah, they do pull it up. They play it back. And they're just like, you know what? I don't see it. Then they play it back in slow-mo. And they're like, still nothing. But it's very, there's very obviously a figure there.
There's a guy there. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, maybe this. And it's like perfectly outlines the figure. And it's like, well, the human brain loves to see people. So
this is in the fires. You're all delusional. Not me, Dr. Lynn Pasco, paranormal researcher, perfectly normal and rational. All you freaks that see a figure. Absolutely not.
And Michael, main Michael, is sitting there being like, oh, this is pretty stupid. Like,
yeah, why did I agree to this?
I am wasting my Halloween evening. I could have sat home and not given out candy. Pointedly had my light off. We find out that Dr. Pasco has already written a book and made a documentary about this house.
Yeah, what the hell?
It's crazy.
But yeah, we talked to Pam about how they got to this point, and she's like, yeah, it was so bad. We wrote to the council to try and get moved out of house, and then that's when I remember how fucking weird England is. And then she's like, they wouldn't move us, they didn't believe us, and so I went to the newspaper, and they made us look like idiots. So then I went to the TV, and that's how Dr. Pasco found us.
And now this is happening.
Yeah, it's like, Pam, I need you to think rationally for a minute and stop escalating this. Stop going to greater and greater levels of humiliation for yourself and your children.
Guess I'll start skywriting. Ghost.
I'm going to Hollywood. But yeah, the book that Dr. Pasco wrote is called Angels of the Odd. And she shows some clips from her research and documentary of different ways that they've documented this ghost. Because it's not just, like, banging on walls. It's talking through Suzanne.
Yeah.
It's doing a demon voice.
Yeah, it's a scary voice that talks to them. Like, it answers questions, sort of. And they're like, funny, huh? Ha ha.
All good children go to heaven. And she's, Dr. Pasco is explaining all of the ways that, like, this is verifiable. Like, it's not just Susan doing a goofy voice.
We asked her to do it again, and she couldn't do it.
She couldn't. She was giggling too much. And then, like, we filled her mouth with colored liquid. Colored? And taped it shut, and she still did the voice? Pam, why are you letting this happen?
Well, I tried moving, and I'm all out of ideas.
Yeah, and, main Michael, not super impressed by this. And anyway, bring out your box of broken junk.
You've got broken shit from the house? And it's like, it broke due to temperature changes, not smashing into walls and stuff. And he's like, a broken plate. And this is when they're like, also sometimes, Suzanne gets scratches, and we watch them develop with no one touching her. And it's like, we were just doing a lot of laughing, and then you're showing me her fucking cat scratch, raccoon attack face.
Yeah. Rough.
Yeah.
Rough for Susan.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, then they talk some more about that. Like, is this all centered around Suzanne? If she's the one that's getting her face scratched and having a demon voice come
through. She's the one with the colored liquid.
Yeah, and the automatic writing.
And so Dr. Pasco's like, yes. And then Pam is like, hello, excuse me, I'm still on the phone. No.
Yeah. She's like, well, this is a typical poltergeist pattern with, like, introverted people who bottle up their emotions and has nowhere to go, so it psychically manifests. And
we've all read Carrie. Yeah. That sort of thing.
Yeah. And Pamela's like, there's nothing fucking wrong with Susan.
How dare you?
There's nothing wrong with my Susie.
Yeah, are you saying she's a bit funny? And it's like, no, I just wrote a whole book about that.
Yeah, I'm just saying she's possessed by a poltergeist.
Just saying she's psychic or whatever. And Pam's like, it's a fucking ghost. And it's like, we'll talk about this later off air, okay?
Yeah. Anyway, we brought somebody else, somebody new on to insult you, Pam.
This guy.
Dr. Silvestri, the American skeptic, who says you're all fucking nuts.
God, I wanted something bad to happen to him so badly.
No, he gets off scot-free. The ghost cannot cross the ocean. It can only affect the UK. Can only affect people within the reach of the BBC.
But yeah, he's just like sitting in a weird gray box with like a fake window to New York behind him. And he's just like, it's all fake.
Yeah, so we haven't seen one single thing that can't be faked. That's the problem with these paranormal researchers. It's not really research, because it can't be tested or repeated.
And they're fighting, and it's clear these two have spoken, like, Lynn's like, you can't show me falling in love in a lab, and he's like, whatever.
Sick line, also the beginning of their enemies to lovers.
Yeah. If things didn't go the way they go, they're falling in love over ghosts. That'd be a fun story to write. They still get fucking murdered by an evil ghost at the end, but the rest of it is an enemies to lovers.
Yeah. Come on, Dr. Silvestri. Dr. Pasco. Yeah, Maine Michael is like, well, that was awkward and full of sexual tension. Hey, Sarah, you want to tell your ghost story now?
She's like, oh, sure.
Let's go back to Fox Hill Drive.
I'm getting my ass kicked at Monopoly, so why not? Yeah.
So she tells her story, which is like she was at a friend's house, stay in the night, woke up by some harpsichord music, saw an Indian woman dancing, like bobbing her face around in her face, giving her a weird vibe, not a threatening vibe, just a weird vibe. Mm-hmm. And then she finds out that the home where she was staying was formerly occupied by the Viceroy of India, who had two concubines, who died. Don't ask any questions about that. And they could not be buried on consecrated ground because they were concubines. I don't know if that's how that works.
Nope.
So he buried them on the house.
In the garden.
On the property.
Normal. Again, we're not asking questions.
Yeah, don't ask any questions. And then, you know, white people bought the house and they were like getting rumors around in town about this. So they were thinking about getting rid of the rumor is that they're thinking of digging up these concubines and chucking them. And the ghosts were upset about that. And then from Sarah talking to her friend, she's like, nobody actually wants to chuck those corpses. And she's like, I'm going to go tell the ghosts that you have nothing to worry about. And then the spirit of the house lifted and everything was good.
Yeah. It's a weird story. It also seems semi-recent because it's like, oh, Mike, you were there.
Yeah. Too. I mean, it would have to be. They're not old people.
They're not old. No, they are young guys. Maine Michael is older.
Yeah, Maine Michael is older, probably in his 50s or 60s. But yeah, Sarah and Mike Smith are, what, 30s probably? Mm-hmm. 90s, 30s?
Yeah.
Which
is a difficult 30s to determine at times.
Yes. But yeah, cool story. It's your turn, though. No, she wants to go to bed. Like, Kimmy is, like, elbowing Sarah so hard. And
it's 8 o'clock.
I thought it was her turn, but no, Kimmy just wants to go to bed. It's past her bedtime.
I, too, am abandoning Monopoly.
Yeah, fuck this. And Sarah's like, well, I guess we forced your mom to go live in a box, so it's my job to put you to bed.
It's so weird.
And so she does. She takes her upstairs and puts her to bed. And then she's complaining about how cold it is in the house and, like, complaining, like, oh, we set up all this stuff and all this gear and all these cameras and we couldn't figure out how to get the central heating working. And it's like, lady, ghost. Weren't you just talking to the thermal cameraman earlier and about how it would be important to be able to detect not heat, but coldness? No, don't talk about
it. Oh, I also wasn't listening to Alan. I know he's not important.
Let's go make some coffee.
Yep.
Instead. So they do that.
And yeah, and she's like, I'm uneasy waiting. Yeah. Wish something would just happen. Then we go back to the studio to get an anonymized video of a man telling a story about a spit ghost that haunted him.
This is my favorite of the, like, non sequitur ghost.
It's so funny. It's gonna eat some mackerel. Then it had spit on it.
It was pretty, like, benign presence until it spat on my face. And then it spat on my doorstep, and then it spat on my shoes.
And then it smeared shit in my house also. It was a spit and shit ghost. Yeah, and then he's just like, I'm done. That's all there is to say about this ghost.
It's like, after I yelled at it, it smeared shit everywhere. And then, you know what? It's not the first time we'd found random shit in our house, but that was the first time it was smeared.
End of clip.
Yeah, end recording. Hang up the phone.
So many times he's like, and it was covered in something that looked like spit, and it had what looked like spit on it. Like a lot of spit. I understand why you want your face to be fucking blurred for the spit ghost story.
And so, Maine Michael throws back to Fox Hill Drive, where Craig, the jokester, fucking takes off running down the street because there's some other people that he needs to interview and they are not here and I did not go to them before getting my cue. So let's jog through the darkness for a while.
If he didn't have darkness to jog through, when would he tell us that he doesn't like Halloween? All the kids in their masks and the fucking candy. Craig, anyway. You're the enemy. You don't like Halloween.
No, I love to scare people, but I don't like Halloween.
He's a weird one.
Yeah. Anyway, jogs down to a playground where he meets two grim ladies who are just hanging out outside the playground, like at the gates. And they're like, yeah, I am Pam's across the street neighbor. I have witnessed the weird things going on there. I have heard the sounds and the banging. And one day, their window was smashed, and I was concerned. And they were in the yard crying, and so I made them a cup of tea, and it's been real weird being their neighbors. Anyway, we're here at this playground because fucking cursed stuff keeps happening here.
Yes. People have disappeared.
Yeah, a girl went missing.
Some kid got knifed.
A five-year-old got knifed.
And there was a dead dog here one time.
A dead pregnant dog. Mm-hmm. Somebody did puppy surprise IRL, and it was traumatizing. There are fetuses scattered, puppy fetuses everywhere. The kids don't like this playground anymore.
Yeah, they don't like hanging out here, and Craig's like, huh, weird.
Yeah, okay. Gotta talk to one more weirdo. Hey, Arthur Lacey, what's up? You're a exorcist,
you're
right?
You're a for fun exorcist?
Yeah, you're a unsuccessful amateur exorcist.
Yes,
what's
I
that
am.
Like?
Well, I just went to the house and when I meet a ghost, I say, hey, ghost, I give him like permission to move on. And I went and prayed and that house fucking sucked. It was evil. Evil house.
He said, sure does feel evil in here. And then I went home and felt ill for weeks. And I don't think I helped at all.
Also, hey, you ever thought about genetics and how you inherit things from your parents? What if places inherit things? And Craig's like, whatever, goodbye.
Yeah, that was the opposite of illuminating. Thanks, Arthur. We have to cut back to the house. There is a emergency. It's a circle on the ground.
Yeah.
A mysterious wet spot in the carpet.
She's like, we thought a tomcat got in.
Yeah.
Like, I thought this was cat piss, but I guess it's not.
It's perfectly circular. There's no drip from above. There's no smell. There's just a mystery ground circle.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have her collect a sample with like a little suction thing, suction vial. And they're like, great, we will not get any results from this before the show is over.
No, we're, I mean, Dr. Pascoe's like, that'll be useful for us in 2 to 3 weeks, but no. But also, you're never getting your hands on that.
Well, I don't know that.
No, you don't know that. You're not psychic. No. They get another call from, like, a guy who's hanging out with his mates, and a plate jumped off, like, a table.
Yeah, it's a prank call. Or at least that's how Michael labels it.
Right. This dude's like, weird. You know how you've been describing poltergeist shit? I think poltergeist shit just happened. And Michael's like, thank you for calling and drinking. Good night. Happy Halloween.
Yeah. Dr. Pascoe also describes, like, this is the pattern. Like, you get the first the noises and then water problems. Because we also saw the faucet misbehaving when Sarah went to, like, finish making tea or fuck knows.
Yeah.
And then you get...
Put a different powder in a different cup of liquid as she keeps doing.
Yeah. You gotta have your goodnight powder and your warm-up powder.
Yeah, Suzanne wants some sort of white powder and I don't know if it's milk or what the fuck. Powdered coffee. Too many powders.
But after they cut back from taking the plate call, things are happening, finally, in Fox Hill Road. There's, like, scratching in the walls. Mm-hmm. We see Sarah, like, running around yelling at people to move furniture so that she can get close to the walls to hear what's going on. And then there's more banging. And then, Kim runs in screaming, it's pipes!
Please let these children leave this house.
No, it's pipes. And they go downstairs and like all of the drawings have been taken off the fridge and laid out in a trail going to a circle of crayons floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a small cat jump scare outside the sliding glass door. And this is all very, like, things are happening. OMG, OMG.
Did you see the man in the glass door?
No.
I took his picture because he made me scream in my house. There's a man who shouldn't be there in the reflection on the glass door.
There are a couple of good, subtle, man appear.
Yeah.
That is not commented on at all.
Yeah. I was yelling. I was like, ah, fuck. Because it's the classic, my greatest fear, a guy where a guy shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think this is like the first, they don't see it.
No.
So, but we do. They're too scared by that cat. I didn't know they owned a cat. The cat's outside. They pretty clearly don't own a cat.
So, like, do they leave the girls in their bedroom? Is that what happens?
The girls are in the bedroom and they're like, Suzanne is missing? Because they have like cameras up there.
Yeah.
And Sarah's like, things are scary. I'm going to go check on them. And they're like, no, don't. And I don't know why they're no, don't. But they're like, no, stop it. Don't go. So Sarah's like crouching at the top of the stairs.
Yeah, and they start using the different camera angles. They're like, landing. No, I said the landing. No,
the other
landing. The landing looking the other way.
We should have fucking numbered these. Camera 4.
So then they find the right camera and they like pan and zoom and they see like Suzanne crouching like behind a door in the bathroom or something. hitting the wall with a hammer.
Yeah, she's banging on some pipes.
And they're like, okay, show's over. Michael in the studio is immediately like, he's ready to pull this.
Every plug in the studio.
That's it. I'm sure there's a cartoon or something we can fucking show for the rest of the hour. I'm done. We're done. It's all done. But when they realize they're caught, they, like, Kimmy starts screaming.
Yes. This was a confusing moment. I rewound this a couple times to be like, what happened? And I still don't know. But yeah, it's like peering through a door, screaming. Suzanne's like, it wasn't me. And Sarah's like, it doesn't matter. Please, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. No one's mad at you. No one's mad at you. It's fine.
In the studio, Michael, I'm so mad at you.
I'm so fucking mad.
And what this Dr. fucking hoax. Pasco's
like, now let's not be too hasty.
Yeah.
So that part did not look good, but that doesn't mean they're not really haunted.
That doesn't invalidate 6 months of us hanging out and seeing metric tons of shit. And Michael's like, I don't know, I think it does.
And they were feeling the pressure, like they had to produce a ghost so that people would believe them. So yeah, they lied. That was not good. But they weren't lying the whole time. And yeah, Pam comes back in and is like hugging Suzanne.
It's like, you didn't have to do this. Yeah, like, Suzanne, it clearly was not a family plan.
And is it Michael in the studio who keeps asking her questions? Yeah, she's like, was it you writing in the notebook? Was it you banging on the pipes? Was it you?
And the thing is, I think only Sarah and maybe Pam can hear him.
Well, so Suzanne keeps going, I don't want to talk about it, I don't want to talk about it, but that could just be spontaneous.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, cool, that sucked. Hey, is that skeptic guy still
he is, on the satellite sitting link? There, and he's like, seems just like I said, fucking fake.
They're all disturbed attention seekers. I told you so.
I told you, Lynn. Like, he uses her first name at this point.
Yeah, they're fucking.
Yeah.
Angrily,
furiously, whenever they're on the same side of the pond.
And then that's awkward again. So we have to throw to Mike Smith in the studio. Hey, what's going on with the phones, Mike?
So the thing about Mike Smith in the studio with the phones is he's just getting like more and more pieces of paper in his hands. Like, yeah. People are printing things out and handing him notes, and he's just getting, like, more and more flustered. It's just like, I'm getting all these faxes.
Yeah. He's like, people keep calling. I have this whole fistful of papers saying they also see the figure in the video. And both Dr. Pasco and Michael are just like, the fucking figure in the video.
They won't listen.
We don't want to hear about this, Mike Smith in the studio.
He's like, sorry, that's what every one of these pieces of paper says. And they're all describing the same thing. Old guy, or maybe lady, bald, dress, scary.
Buttons.
Eyeballs, dark eyeballs.
And then Dr. Pasco's like, wait, can I get somebody to get me a specific piece of footage? And Michael's like, I guess. I don't know. Do you have, like, a research assistant here or somebody? You can tell what you want.
Did you bring a red wagon full of VCR tapes?
It's like, I'm sure you fucking can, but I'm not going to get it for you.
Yeah, I also don't give a shit at this point.
I'm trying to get home. We're definitely not going to run over now. We're going to shut it down.
I believe we get another call.
We get another ghost story call.
But it's not like an old, it's not like, it's happening right now. It's like, guess what just happened? My glass coffee table exploded.
Oh yeah, they do a ghost story, which is very banal, like just another bad feeling house. And then, yeah, they go to the live call.
Right.
Which is, yeah, my glass table exploded. There's blood everywhere.
There's blood on the wallpaper.
My husband just left in the ambulance.
And my kids won't stop watching your special. And my clock has stopped. And she's, like, on the verge of tears.
And my Shane Michaels just like, whatever.
Whatever, lady. And she's
tell
just like,
your kids to go to bed. Like, it's not our fault if your kids were traumatized. They shouldn't have been watching this. We gave a warning at the beginning that it was going to be scary. So you're a bad mom. I'm not a bad TV presenter. Hang up on this lady.
The glass and the blood and the blood and the glass.
No. And
no. I just want to say, just real fast, as someone who once barely touched a thick piece of glass and it did shatter into 10 million pieces, this does happen from time to time for whatever reason. I don't think I'm haunted.
Could you be, though?
I could be. It hasn't done very much. That was a while ago.
Yeah. But yeah, Main Michael's just like, now.
Let's yeah, hang up on her.
Panic.
Hang up on her. And like, this woman, like, the way, it's a really good little bit, like, just like, my kids won't stop watching. Like, it's clearly something very scary is happening in her house, and he's like, whatever.
Get this lady off my phone.
He's just yelling click into the headset. Oh, we should say, every time they take a call, him and Dr. Pasco have to pick up, like, wire handset phones to hear the call. It's very fun.
Yeah, so Dr. Pasco found the footage that she was looking for. It was a clip from her interview with Kim from however long ago, where Kim is describing what Pipes looks like, and that description matches pretty much what the callers were saying. And she's like, don't you see? And Michael's like, no, what is your fucking point?
And, you know, I'm not sure what her point is, because she's on Poltergeist for a long time. I feel like this might tip you towards Ghost, but she's like, no, maybe they're... And her thing is, like, Suzanne is the focus of the Poltergeist, and it's like, maybe it's Kim, actually.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back in the house, how many cats have you heard at once in your life? Is it this many?
All of them right now.
Are your walls full of cats? Theirs are.
Yeah, we heard scratching in the walls earlier. I'm like, oh, they just have mice. But no, they have cats.
They have a lot of cats.
Also, Suzanne has gone back to her room and has scratched the ever-loving shit out of her face.
Mm-hmm. Or something has.
Yeah, something has. She has scratches all over her face.
And she's catatonic.
Oh, yeah. She's in agony, as Pam says. She's in agony, and she won't even let me touch her. But yeah, they're doing their skeptic thing. They're like, she just has had a lot of traumatic experiences and just humiliated herself on live TV. She probably scratched herself with her fingernails. Like, this is clearly self-harm. And Pam pulls out her hand. She's like, what fingernails? Because she has short ones. She don't really have no fingernails. No. But anyway, Sarah, go get a cold compress. It's your job to fetch things from the kitchen in this show.
It kind of is. Kim also is like, hey, quick sidebar, quick note for all of you. Pipes says we can't leave. Anyway,
yeah, carry on. They're talking about, like, we gotta get these kids out of here, right? Like, at this point, we don't know what's going on, but it's weird. But Kim's like, Pipes wants you to see everything. He says you can't leave.
He wants to see everybody. So just keep that in mind, I guess.
Yeah. And this is where they say that, like, if you just tuned in, surprise, it's still Ghost Watch because of the dramatic turn of events. It's like,
wow. Yeah. Child's in agony and it might be a hoax. Welcome to Ghost Watch.
Yeah. I mean, I guess this has started to get interesting. So keep it on. Let's take another call. Some lady says a child drowner used to live where you guys live.
Yep.
That's fun.
Her name's like Mother Steddon or something. And it's just like, yeah, she drowned kids in big kettles. And then she moved there.
And then Mike Smith in the studio reports that they're getting lots of calls about people having other strange occurrences, much like Shattered Glass Table Lady. People's pets are freaking out. People's kids are freaking out. People's appliances are freaking out.
No clock in Britain will work tomorrow. They're all broken.
Meanwhile, the video feed back to Fox Hill Road starts glitching out.
Yeah, there have been the occasional glitches before this, but it's getting worse.
Yeah, it's like the shot of Sarah is real bad, and then like her earpiece wigs out. She has to take it out.
The cameraman also around here does see the guy, like in a quick pan, and then you pan back and he's gone. The cameraman notices the ghost this time.
Yeah. And, but yeah, stuff really starts popping off, like banging upstairs when we know where all the children are currently, because Suzanne has like run down and hidden in a corner. A picture flies off the wall. Suzanne starts doing the demon voice. I guess we lost Kim this time.
They look up, they're like, wait, where did Kim go?
The lights are flickering, like the water in the sink is being weird.
Yes, like Sarah goes in there and like Kim's bunny is in the sink with its eyes
torn out.
And then she's hiding behind like the open fridge door and it's like, Pipes says he was a bad bunny. Here are his eyes.
Yeah. And the million cats are now in the glory hole. Mm-hmm. There's a mirror on the wall that's like rattling. It's
losing its shit. Yeah, they hear the million cats in the glory hole, and Sarah and Mike, the cameraman, are like, we've got to get this door open. And I'm like, no, you do not.
Well, we're doing it.
Oh, my God.
We are prying it open. We are ripping it apart with our bare hands. Oh, it's flinging open and knocking Mike, the cameraman, against the wall and breaking that mirror. And, oh, there's a guy in
there. There's a man in there.
Ah! Nobody saw it, though. Don't worry.
I saw it. That was enough.
Yeah. But they don't comment. Nobody comments on it again. Yet again.
Michael in the studio should be like, there's a man in there.
I finally saw it.
Are you a hoax? I'd like to go home now.
Yeah. Did Craig get in the glory hole? Steal himself back up? What a trickster.
What a guy, that Craig. They lose the inside feed.
Yeah. It just goes black and we hear like Suzanne screaming, he's touching me, and then we lose it completely. And so they cut to Craig outside, who doesn't know he's on air.
Right.
Talking to Demescu, pushes a kid.
And the thing about them out here is like, you know, we saw that big van full of tech. Isn't sensing a thing.
No.
Like, Alan's like, really boring night for me. And Craig's like, yeah, real boring out here. Nothing is wrong. Like, they don't hear shit. They don't read shit. And then, yes, he does push a child on TV.
Yeah, on the head. Like, yeah. He pushes that child by the head.
Fucking hate kids.
But then they're like, oh, we got the feeds back. And they cut back to Fox Hill. And it's like, clearly footage from earlier,
yeah, they're where they're playing sitting Monopoly. Playing
the game. Like, Susan and Sarah and Kim are all there playing. It's fine. No,
it looks fine.
Everything is fine.
Everyone was just screaming, but now they're fine.
Yeah, they're having a soda. But that's all good. We can take another call now. They get a call from a guy who tells them some more about the history of the house. He's like, did you look into the history of the house? And Dr. Pascal's like, of course we did. We've got every record of every person that's ever lived on this property. He's like, okay, so you know about Mr. and Mrs. Sellers, right? And she's like, yes, of course.
Duh.
In the 60s, they lived there.
Ugh. Hang up on him.
I cannot take being discredited about one more fucking thing tonight, anonymous caller.
And he's like, did you know they sublet a room?
No.
She's like, no. And it's like, well, it was illegal, so that makes sense. It wouldn't have been on the books.
They didn't report it. People can live places without people ever knowing. But yeah, it was their nephew who was a little freak. He fucked up, molester, scary guy.
Yep.
Deeply psychotic and bad. He liked to hang out in the glory hole. He
Yeah, this guy's like, I knew he lived there because I was his social worker.
It's like, if you were his social worker, then it had to have been on the books that he lived there. Yeah, social workers don't just not have records.
I guess he doesn't live anywhere. I guess he rides the rails.
Well, I'm not a narc, so I'm not going to report this little freak lives at this house.
But it is like, you know, he wasn't great. And then he moved there, and then it got worse, and yeah. He said there was a lady trying to get into his body.
Yeah, he's kept having these delusions, and then, while his aunt, uncle were away on vacation, he killed himself in the glory hole, and it was 12 days before they found him, and he had a bunch of cats. Fucking cats. And, you know, they had him a little bit.
He herded them all into the glory hole with him. Yeah. Which is, I realize that he's about to take his own life, but that's a wild thing to do for you to be like, well, I'm just going to herd all these cats under the stairs. And yeah, they fucking ate his shit because he locked them in a glory hole.
And killed himself.
And died. Yeah. Yeah.
And, so yeah. Michael's really done now. He's like, okay, no more fucking calls. We're shutting this down. We got to get those kids out. How are things going back there? I don't want to hear about any of this shit anymore. They finally figure out that the footage is old. Like,
yeah, it takes them so long.
Dr. Pascoe, I think, points out, like, the picture that we saw fly across the room earlier, it's still on the wall. It's like, yeah, that, and it's obviously not live footage.
You spoke to them while they were playing this game, remember? Like, the only thing that would be better is if we saw Sarah turn to the cameraman to tell her harpsichord story.
It's bedtime. But yeah, so as soon as they figure this out, it cuts to inside the actual house, just darkness and bellowing, and mm-hmm. cut back to the studio, and there's wind blowing.
Yeah, there's, like, a wind is blowing, and Michael's like, oh, wind in a studio, that's weird.
There's a wind event happening in the studio.
That doesn't seem likely. And, like, the ghost is, like, remixing, because I think the last thing Pascoe says is, like, it's in the machines. And then it's like, here's some clips from earlier, slowed down and rewound and being weird.
Chopped and screwed.
Yep. This ghost is Generation Remix, thank you.
But yeah, then Dr. Pascoe's like, you know what we did? We created an enormous seance. Like, with everybody watching this and giving it attention and power, we're giving the ghost power! It's going everywhere!
Michael is not buying.
No. But cameraman Michael is getting carried out on a stretcher.
Yeah, because he got bashed by that mirror.
Yeah, he's not doing well. He went down hard and stayed down.
We will never know if he gets up again or not.
Because yeah, we're now, like, we are trying to herd people outside. They got cameraman Michael out. We see Kim come out. We see Pam come out. But, like, Sarah and Susan are still inside.
As is the sound guy. Like, lead, yes. Michael is like, oh, the cameraman got out. I'm like, you did not even mention your sound guy.
Who cares about him?
And this is when the infrared comes back. It
finally cuts to the infrared footage. My TV decided this was the end of the movie.
Oh, shit.
It just came up with the, like, Amazon, like, up next thing.
Hey! The movie is not over, Amazon.
But I, exited out of that, but it was funny.
At one point, Shudder did, like, shut down on me, and I had to restart. And it was at one point when Michael's taking a call and he's like, yes, we hear you. And then it just cut to black. I'm like, oh, this is scary. And it's like, oh no, Shudder. Shudder's like, there's a problem with your video.
Yeah, nothing really happens with the infrared. It's just, hey, we remembered we have it. But then it cuts back to actual footage and, like, they were not just bobbing for apples in a tub. They had apples, like, hung from a string.
Oh, yeah, and these things are just whipping back and forth.
Swinging. And then back in the studio, like, the lights are sparking and
Yeah, like, things are exploding, and you hear a man be like, hey, everyone leave, and all the phone bank people are like, all right, we're leaving, fuck this.
I'm not dying for fucking ghost watch.
And we hear Mike Smith being like, I would like to speak to my wife, please. And everyone's just like, run.
Sorry, you can't. Susie is screaming for help. Oh, mm-hmm. No, she's in the glory hole.
Yep.
Oh, no, Sarah's going in after her for she's some like, reason.
Don't worry, Susie, it's going to be okay. And they get eaten by this fucking house.
Yeah, cat yowling, door slam, chaos in the studio. Mm-hmm.
The power goes out in the studio.
Completely, yeah.
And we just hear Mike being like, well, the power's out in the studio.
Yeah, and then we see, like, some really dark footage of him, like, from the chest down, like, standing, talking to somebody. And he's like, I don't know which camera's working.
I think he's alone at this point. But he's just, like, wandering back and forth, being like, teleprompter's still on. And he's like, you know, round and round the garden, which is the thing the ghost had said earlier. And he's like, what's that? And then his voice gets very scary. And like, we're just seeing him like nose down. Like, we do not see the top half of his face. And the ghost says, you didn't believe those stories about Mother Seddon, did you? Fee, fi, fo, fum. And that's the end of Ghost Watch.
R.I.P. to
everybody.
The Isle of Britain.
Yeah, they all died. So, Rose.
Yeah.
What did you think of Ghost Watch?
I had a good time with it. I think it was pretty well constructed as far as, like, it starts out super dull.
Yeah.
But then the chaos escalation really works, I think. Like you said, it is a real early 90s artifact. Like, if they showed something like this nowadays, like, no one would believe it. But they did shit like that, like Al Capone's vault and like live event shit that we don't actually know how this is gonna go. So it's very believable in that way. So, and yeah, like I said, the figures, the different guys showing up in places, that was very well done and, like, subtle and not commented upon. I think it was pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked this. And I thought to myself, if I saw this in 1992 as a British 4-year-old, we wouldn't be doing this show because I'd be dead. Like, if I saw this as a child, like, that's the thing about this is, like, lots of people, again, like you said, they did a lot of specials like this. And like we said at the beginning, like, they hide those credits. Like, they go by fast. They want you to think this is real. I think they do a really good job of that.
And it was 1992.
Yeah.
People watch live TV. Like, people would just turn this on in the middle.
Yeah. And be like, oh, they're looking at a scary house. Yeah, it was interesting to watch this after we talked about things being scary last time with The Omen. Because, you know, we were like, oh, being scared and whatever. And I'm like, The Omen is not, to me, scary. This is scary. And it's not that scary, but it's just like, God, a guy where a guy shouldn't be. And I think it builds dread really effectively. I you know, you said the beginning is dull, and it is, but I think it is in, like, a fun way. And it's obviously, we can't watch it not knowing that it's not fake, but it is fun to just watch it with that lens also to be like, God, they tricked so many fucking people, and it's so obvious why. Like, they worked really hard.
Yeah, and, like, obviously, they had a real phone line that people were calling. Like,
yeah, they, like, it's not like a fake number. I mean, maybe it is in Britain. I don't know, but it's...
No, the IMDb trivia said it was a real phone number. Though when you called, they would tell you, it's not real, but do you have a ghost story you want to tell?
Oh, that's fun. Because, yeah, they keep showing, and it's like zeros and eights and ones, and it's just like, yeah, what if I called that right now? Probably wouldn't work. But that's a clever bit. That's like, you know, the fake website of the early 90s. But yeah, I had a real fun time with this one.
Here's another piece of trivia. The actress who plays Dr. Pascoe says that when she got home from the the filming or whatever, the broadcast, she had a voice message, an answering machine message from Judi Dench, who chastised her for ruining Ghostwatch for her. She's like, I know you're an actress, so I know this wasn't real. I didn't get to have fun with everyone.
Oh, sorry, Dame Judi. How about you act like you didn't know? Go win your Oscar, lady.
I liked the set. Mm-hmm. Like, we at the very beginning, we see Michael Parkinson, like, walking in front of a mantle with, like, skulls on it.
There's just, like, a framed painting of a ghost up there.
Later, there's a big painting. Very fun.
And there's big, like, stone skulls at the bottom of the fireplace that have little fires in them. You said he was a real guy?
Huh? Yeah. Like, that's part of how they, mm-hmm. you know, got away with it, is some of the people were playing themselves, like the presenters. I think all of them. I think like the Michaels and like Sarah and Craig. Wow.
Damn, sorry I said those mean things, Craig, but you are very irritating in this. That'd be a weird, like, day after Halloween to be like, hello, I'm Sarah Green, and I was not eaten by a house.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the beginning was, to me, not believable. Like, okay. This is a little, like, fakey-fakes, but, like, all the jokes and how loose and, like, shaggy and stuff it is. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Like, if you were trying to present this, even in a joking way, I just don't think, like, I don't know. But I did still think it came together in the end. I think probably the most or least believable part of it was them getting all the house backstory from callers.
Yeah.
Like, how do you know that? And you know that. And you know that. And Dr. Pasco, no matter how much research you did, didn't find out any of this shit. Like, not so sure about that. But the vibe, the overall vibe, mm-hmm. and the chaos, and, like, especially towards the end when it's like, we don't know really what the fuck is happening mm-hmm. at the house because we keep losing transmission. And I feel like nowadays, if this had been made nowadays, it would have been much more lampshaded. Mm-hmm. There would be a lot more people, like, people would see the figures every time they happened, but mm-hmm. then they would be going, what was that?
Yeah.
What was that? Did you see that?
Yeah.
And then, you know, they would not cut back to it, so we would not, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, and same with the like, footage cutting out, there would be a lot more of that. It's like, well, we're losing the footage in the house. We don't know what's going on. And here it was a lot more organic.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
I like the hoax reveal. I like the presenter immediately trying to
being like, well, that sucks.
The hoax reveal.
He's a very funny presence. Like, he's just not having it at any point in the whole thing. Just being like, well, whatever, call me, but don't call us.
Yeah, I actually don't want to hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's up?
If I had had time, if I had watched this early enough yesterday before the Oscars, I definitely would have followed it up by watching the Blair Witch Project.
It was inspired by this.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I felt a real yen to be like, I should do that also, because I haven't done that before in my life.
You've not seen Blair Witch?
I have not seen the Blair Witch.
If you liked this, you might like the Blair Witch.
Yeah, well, it's currently on the Criterion Channel, so I think I will get to it before our next episode. I thought briefly about suggesting it for an episode, then I'm like, I don't know how much there is to, like, talk beat by beat about the Blair Witch. I mean, I haven't seen it, but I feel like it's a lot of, and then they walk through the woods, and then they walk through the woods, and then they yell about it, and then they're a stickman. But yeah, I think I'll take the plunge.
See the stickman.
I gotta see the stickman. As a big fan of the Scooby-Doo Blair Witch parody from Cartoon Network back in the day. Big fan. Gotta see the Stickman. Anyway, congrats to Britain. You did a great job with this one.
You did it.
You did a great job. Is there anything else you'd like to say about Ghost Watch?
I don't think so. I do think having the, like, filler ghost stories did add to the authenticity. Mm-hmm. Like, we gotta have some clips packages that we...
Yeah. Well, if you know that they're going into it being like, we might not see shit. Like, that's why we have to have Craig outside. That's why we have to take phone calls. That's why we have to pre-film a spit ghost. Sarah, you got a ghost
story? Tell it.
God, please. And take your time. Like, that's why the stuff at the beginning did read to me. Because it's just like, we have to fill an hour to an hour and a half of this shit. So, I'm going to take the camera. We're going to infrared the crowd. Stretch. We haven't even started and it's time to stretch. Good job traumatizing a bunch of kids.
Yep. Giving them PTSD. Getting written up in the British Medical Journal.
Too scary, they say. And for inspiring found footage everywhere.
Yeah. Really Paranormal Activity oranges over here.
That's right, it is. All right, well, we don't have any emails, but if you would like to email us, you can do so at horrorandahalf@gmail.com. That's horrorandahalf, all words, all lowercase, all smushed together.
Yep, you can also get at us on Twitter, @horrorandahalf. Follow us for news and announcements. Come tell us what the scariest thing you saw as a kid was. What traumatized you as a child?
What traumatized me as a child? It's a Goosebumps cover. Too scary. Next time, we're gonna watch that Pet Sematary remake.
Hey.
Because we, like I said, Mom got it for both of us in a big thrills and chills pack. Thank you, Mom.
Yeah, let's go revisit our friends, Church and Judd.
Uh-huh.
And Gage?
Gage, yep. And Mr. and Mrs. Creed.
Yeah.
And the girl.
Yeah.
I mean, last time we visited Ludlow, Maine, the last thing they said to us was to stay the fuck out of Ludlow, but we're not doing it, because Pet Sematary Bloodlines does not run our lives.
No. No.
No.
May you never be in the hospital, but if you are, may you get two hospital pies.
Two pies. That's Maine hospitality for you. Hospitality.
Hospitality. So, yeah, until we get returned to the Pet Sematary, until dead is better, you've been booed, treat.
Until we watch a movie everybody loved and thought was really good.
Yeah, that's what we do on this show.
It's the only thing we do.
It's a show about movies that everybody loved.
Yeah, we've never watched a bad movie.
That's why it's called Love and a Half.
Wherever the week we get together to talk about love and the love inspired.
Love of movies that everyone loves.
Everyone loves.
It's basically I Love Films from You Talking You Two to Me.
Yeah. Do they still talk about how they love films? Do they still have a podcast?
Yeah, they just did You Springin' Springsteen on My Bean.
Very stupid. Yeah. I liked, I didn't listen to all of the U2 one because I gotta tell you, I don't care about U2 at all. I did like it when they talked about movies, though.
Yeah.
Yeah? Did you listen to the Talking Heads?
I didn't.
You talking heads to my talking head?
I should. I should go back.
Yeah, they're good shows.
I like that they're having a nice time.
I sort of fell off with the Springsteen one because I do not care about Bruce Springsteen.
Listen, that's fair.
But I will get back to it eventually. There are too many podcasts, I say on my podcast.
Behind the scenes doesn't count. No, there are too many podcasts. We've been around long enough. We've been grandfathered.
Yes, it's true.
We're not one of the too many.